Hello, everyone. Joshua Gilliland here, one of the founding members of the Legal Geeks. Thank you for joining us for part two of our Star Wars 40th anniversary special, The Law Strikes Back. With us is our good friend, Judge Matthew Sciarrino from New York. And for compliance with New York rules, we are recording this after hours, and the judge is not,
I am from my secret hearth base, yes.
Not at the office, not in chambers. Video clearly shows him at home. So, Your Honor, how are you?
I am good.
Excellent. Also with us is our JAG officer friend who knows the world of Star Wars inside and out, and that is Thomas Harper. Thomas, great to have you again.
Oh, present for duty.
Excellent. Well, you're back for the sequel. So, for The Law Strikes Back. So let's talk about, Your Honor, what was May 25th, 1977 like for you when Star Wars first came out?
I remember, you know, the commercials and the trailers for the movie, and there weren't that many of them until it really took off. And the first thing that caught my attention was just the lines. I never saw lines around the theater the way that there was for Star Wars. And I didn't see it opening day, but the buzz by 3 or 4 days after it opened was, this is a movie you have to see. And I remember my friends and I going soon thereafter to the movie theaters and seeing it. And in those days, the movie just ran continuously. And we went during the day, and we literally walked in at the end of the movie. So the first thing I saw when I walked into the theater was the Death Star exploding, and then the medal ceremony, and then we sat to watch the rest of the movie. So it was an interesting way of seeing it.
I remember when Force Awakens came out, somebody on Twitter joked that movie theaters should just sell day passes, because people would stay and just watch 12 hours straight, because you get sucked into that world and we analyze it. We look at the details. I'm like, I get it.
It's funny you mentioned that, because Regal Cinemas, which I don't know if that exists out in California, but it's all up and down the East Coast. For Rogue One, they sold a Rogue One movie pass, and you couldn't, I guess you could theoretically just sit in the theaters and like lift your feet up as they came and swept in between showings. But it was, you know, a set price and unlimited viewings of the movie. And my wife sent it a link to me while I was at work one day. And I, of course, set everything aside and thought very carefully and like broke out the calculator. How many times do I need to see this to make it worth the money?
I saw Rogue One 3 or 4 times in the theater. I had to prepare for a CLE that I was doing on it. And there was also just the fact that I wanted to see it again. And, you know, these movies have so much detail in the background that to really take it in, you know, like the first time, it's just the splendor of seeing it and the adventure. And, you know, like the second or third time is when you're paying attention, you know, taking notes for all the other things floating around in the background as they, you know, like Jedha's a great example, you know, of just a lot happening. They created a lot to bring that to life.
George, what was it like? First thing I did when I got home was pop in episode 4. Because I just wanted to, it made me want to watch the original, because it was just such an amazing lead in to episode 4. And I've now read, in fact, I finished today the Rebel Rising, which is the Jyn prequel book, which is spectacular. It's another YA book, so it's a very, very fast read. Same with the Guardians of Willis. And it was two really, really good prequels, but especially the Rebel Rising starts with the, once again, the arraignment charges, and ends with the escape from the tank that's taking it to the penitentiary colony work detail, and it's done with such perfection, and it really explores the Saw story and her relationship with Saw. And I just popped in, just because I didn't have that much time over my lunch hour, the first meeting between her and Saw in Rogue One, because that book will change forever the way you see that first meeting between the two of them. It's spectacular.
I've got it sitting on my shelf, and I have not. I'm finishing Thrawn as we speak, so I haven't. That's my next
book. Thrawn was also very, very good. I mean, anything that Timothy Zahn does is, I think, incredible, and it's great that that particular character came back, because he really was one of my favorites, and if Mary Jade can somehow be worked into the new canon, I think I'll be happy with losing most of the rest of the extended universe. But I was very happy to see, you know, Thrawn being brought back into the canon. I liked the book. I thought they handled it well, and Timothy Zahn is just a great writer.
Oh yeah,
we haven't. Well, we've exchanged messages about the past season of Rebels. What for you were some of the highlights from season 3?
Which one?
Your Honor.
I enjoyed the season. I mean, the certainly I see everything moving towards this balance. And the balance concept. And if, you know, what you see of the trailer of the next movie seems to be moving towards the balance. And I see more and more of that theme kind of in the books as well. So, you know, that's my guess, is that we're going, you know, more towards a discussion of not really dark side, light side. And maybe we'll get into that a little bit more with some later questions, but the balance between the two.
That and thinking of, you know, to the prequels, you know, the Force didn't really seem balanced with the Jedi, you know, abandon all attachments. I mean, it seemed like ways to just accelerate people turning to the dark side, because you're taking away all the things that one would normally fight for in life. And that just seems like a formula for self-destruction to create those who follow the dark side.
Well, Anakin was the ultimate balance maker. You know, when he started, there was a galaxy full of Jedi and two Sith. When he finished, there were two Jedis and two Sith. Perfect balance.
Yoda said a prophecy misread, it could be. So,
right.
Away.
From a certain point of view, definitely. So, now, Your Honor, you have perhaps one of the greatest Star Wars private collections ever. Definitely within any judicial sphere. Could you tell us a little about your collection? Because not everyone's seen it in all of its glory, but, you know, could you describe it for us in your new chambers?
It keeps increasing, and I'm anticipating even more increases, because one of the stores that my daughter's working in currently is the Star Wars store down in Disney. So with Father's Day coming, I think there might be some increase in the collection. It has several areas, some devoted to the Empire. In as much as I think they have the coolest starships, so there's a good portion dealing to the Imperial Navy. I have a section that's the rise and fall and life of Vader. I have some sections devoted to the Jedis, and with the exception of the book collection, which I keep here at my house, most of the Star Wars stuff is there. I keep Vader's lightsaber here in my game room, though.
That's totally normal.
And close by. It should be close by.
In my last trip to Disneyland, I saw the deluxe lightsaber options that they had. You know, they had Luke's green one, they had the Obi-Wan Kenobi, and then they had Vader's. They had lots of Vader's, like only one shelf of Obi-Wan and a bunch for Luke. And it's like, yeah, I totally would love any one of those up on the wall. They are
disappointed. It needs to be the opposite. The Vader one needs to be sold out, and they can have stockpiles of Obi-Wan sitting around for all I'm concerned.
I think they well, I don't know what the supply and demand is, but they just seem to be there was lots of Darth Vader swag that they had in the store, and I don't know if that was just from post-Rogue One or they're gearing up for the 40th anniversary. I don't know what market analysis they did, but there's a lot there, and I think that might be where they think the demand is.
I know tomorrow in a lot of the Disney stores throughout the country, there's a whole bunch of 40th memorabilia that's going for sale. And there's a particular bust of the first poster of Star Wars with the Luke kind of reaching up. That really, really looks nice. But there's going to be, it's Disney, so there will be a lot of products out there for the 40th anniversary.
Does your daughter take orders, sir?
Well, it's funny. There's some stuff that's only available in the regular Disney stores outside of Disney. Okay. And then there are some that are Disneyland exclusives. There are some that are Disney World exclusives. Clearly they do a good job of keeping certain things, in demand enough so that they're collectible, so all the crazies like us will buy them.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
My wife will say otherwise.
Mine too.
And I'm single, so...
And that's why the biggest collection is at my chambers, as opposed to at my house.
Then it's just judicial decor, sir. You just have, you get the ability to call it something different. Perfectly
okay. When you walk into my chambers, there is no doubt that it is my chambers. My courtroom has a certain feel to it, and my chambers is mine.
Do attorneys ever ask for tours?
Yes, attorneys, court officers, clerks. I once was when I was sitting in Manhattan. They had got tours from other countries that came to visit the courthouse, and one of the judges from China was a big Star Wars collection, and he had been talking to one of the clerks, and at the break of during night court, he said, "Yeah, I heard you had this collection, so I brought about 15 judges from China up to my chambers in Manhattan to see the collection," and that was very fun.
That's, oh God, that's awesome.
just envisioning this gathering, and just like everyone in awe.
Oh, that's fantastic, bringing people together. I mean, that's the beauty of Star Wars, because you have people who just love it and they're excited about it. And whether it's looking at different toys or discussing books, there's the... In Los Angeles, there's the Star Wars themed cantina. It's the Scum and Villainy Cantina. And looking at their Instagram account, people go in costume and a variety of different costumes. There was one night where somebody went in a hammerhead costume. Really? That looked beautiful. And people hanging out with him. So it does bring out, I think, some of the best in us.
One of my biggest dreams is when this Disney World and Disneyland Star Wars park opens, because, they talk about a cantina or Jabba's hut. But to walk in and to see that blue elephant creature, and I forget what the heck name he is, at the keyboards is a lifelong... It's on my bucket list. So I hope that in the cantina will be, the singers with the multiple mouths and the blue elephant keyboardist.
I have a little day by day factoid Star Wars calendar on my desk at work, sir. And interestingly, Max Rebo, this is a good contract law question. So he's the leader of the Max Rebo band. He signed his contract. His contract with Jabba is he's to be paid, the entire band is to be paid in food only. And so there's active malcontent amongst the band members that none of them are getting any actual money. They're all just getting food from Jabba, and they're all indentured servants to his palace. So
the tales of Jabba's palace are great. There was a couple of books out on those various tales, and you could just have so much fun with that. And I'm sure that's the people that are in Disney seem to really love the story and be fans themselves. And as a result, I'm hopeful that we're going to get some great stuff.
Definitely. I mean, there's too many of us, and they are catering to our wants and needs. So power to them. Your Honor, you touched on this, with judges from China checking out your chambers because they love Star Wars. What do you think is the appeal of Star Wars to lawyers and judges, regardless of country?
Well, this happened to be a group of judges around the same age as me, give or take a few years. So, you know, they kind of grew up with it to some extent as well. And a lot of them have gone to school here in the United States for at least some schooling. So I think part of it is just the age that we grew up in. It was certainly a movie that excited people. It was a Western to a degree. So you got the people that like those kind of movies. It was good versus evil. And it was just something different and it captured a lot of people's attention and people loved it. And I think, you know, with that and just each generation, it's like, I watch on Facebook every once in a while, they have these videos of these young kids, their reaction when they see the scene when Darth Vader is revealed to be Luke's father. And there's that gasp and that excitement that's in their face, like, wow. And it's amazing that, you know, this many years after these movies came out that they can still have that appeal. And that's where it's still a great movie. You show Star Wars, you know, granted there are people that don't like sci-fi, but anyone who's kind of into sci-fi, they will like the Star Wars movies. They, even the prequels get, you know, torpedoed by everyone. They're not as bad as everyone says. They're not as good as the three originals. They certainly were not as good as Force Awakening and Rogue One, but they still added some really good story elements. There were some other things that, you know, were wrong with them.
Yeah, if they had just a script doctor or two, things could have been a little different.
Actors and actresses that were hired were good. They just weren't necessarily good at acting with so much green screen and effects. So I think that kind of hurt the various actors, because we've seen them in other roles and they're really good actors and actresses.
I think I don't know if either of you have ever seen it, but on YouTube there was a very good editor who went through and made an edited version of each of the prequels. Primarily the best effect you see is in The Phantom Menace and Attack of the Clones. But
and the cutting of Jar Jar.
Yeah, no, effectively it does that. I mean, it cuts it down to a minimal amount, but I think that it's called The Phantom Menace.
It's a great edit.
And it's phenomenal, and it just shows you, you know, I just, anytime I run into somebody who's just vehemently opposed to the prequels, I send them toward that edit, because it really does show you, those movies move. They've got a lot packed into them, and it really is only 8 to 10 minutes per movie that is really an issue, and folks kind of get lost in that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's a distraction. You know, thinking back to 1999 and being in law school when Phantom Menace came out, we all had such great expectations because, you know, of being the generation that grew up with it, you know, that remembered seeing at least Empire in the theater. You know, the original might have been a little hazy for a couple of us, that there was a letdown. But, you know, the expectations were extremely high. While I have no real strong desire to go watch The Phantom Menace again, I've softened and become a little more forgiving towards it, I think in large part because Force Awakens and Rogue One and everything else has been so good. And again, just, we can't go back. We can only go forward.
It still at least kept the story in the forefront. Mm-hmm. And it still was a commercial success, all three of them. They still sold a lot of merchandise. So, you know, but for those prequels, I don't think Disney buys Lucas's rights to these movies, and I don't think we would then have these new movies. So I'm not a prequel hater at all.
That's a fan. I've actually never heard anyone bring out that point, but I think you're absolutely right, Judge, that you know, without those prequels and sort of the additional traction that it gave to the Star Wars universe. I know I was in eighth grade when Phantom Menace came out, so I, you know, as George Lucas talks about it, I was sort of within that range of the target audience for those. But it reignited, you know, what was kind of a waning passion in me as I was getting into, you know, middle school and then high school, and you start getting into that too cool age. But yeah, I, without those, you'd have a tired sort of 40-year-old franchise, maybe with a TV show along the way or two. And I think it's a lot less attractive property without, you know, what that generated for it.
Well, I think there's another issue at play, and that's the Clone Wars. That animated series was exceptional. And I think did
excellent writing. Excellent writing.
Without the Clone Wars, I'm not sure we would have had The Force Awakens.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I don't know that Clone Wars would have existed with the prequel. This is all like one big domino train.
Yeah.
That kind of, you know, started with Jar Jar. So you can thank, I think the connection here is everyone can thank Jar Jar for the Clone Wars and for all current Star Wars property.
And like the way they handled him in the Clone Wars was good. You know, the adventure, I'm blanking on the episode name, but it was an arc with like Mace Windu and Jar Jar on an adventure together.
Yeah.
And it was great. And like it touched on some of the, you know, the way people felt about Jar Jar, because Mace Windu was apparently not a fan while on the adventure with him, but it all worked out okay. So
Jar Jar is there not a more perfect character than Jar Jar to make the motion to bring forth the Military Appropriations Act in the Senate? I mean, there is no one better to make that vote. So, you know, I'm not a Jar Jar hater either.
And what's funny is that he was a representative, so that meant that the senators and the representatives met in the same chamber.
He was standing in for the senator. So he was representing the senator, as opposed to being, because the Senate is, you know, certain planets had senators, certain regions had senators, certain trade interests and guilds had senators, but the body itself was just the senators that voted. So there was no like House of Representatives or a bicameral. It was a unicameral legislature from everything that I could gather from the expanded universe stuff that I've read.
Well, I can just imagine Padme, you know, picking up the memorandum, you know, summarizing Jar Jar's actions just in her gap, like, okay, you know, approve this mundane thing. Wait a minute, Military Creation Act. Whoa.
Well, let's the other big legal issue that I've been thinking about is, you know, I'm an evidence nerd, and Your Honor, you wrote that great article about Roar, as you called it, with admissibility of electronically stored information. How would you see a hologram, whether it's Princess Leia Organa message to General Kenobi or Galen Erso to his daughter? How would you want someone to authenticate that and go through the different admissibility steps?
But you know, the whole purpose of my Roar is that even as the technology changes, the rules kind of still apply. So it's always the basics, you know, is it relevant? So if it's something that's relevant to the trial, then we go to the next step. And that's, you know, you got to explain how the tech operates and you know, to the satisfaction of the court. And if it's a, you know, present sense impression, is an a real time recording of something, how does it operate? How does it record? How does it play back? Can it be altered? Is there pieces of it missing? Is this the entire recording? It's no different, I don't think, than a videotape or an audio recording or anything along those lines. Is it a hologram that's created after the fact to be a demonstration of what happened? And then it's just like any demonstrative tool that's, you know, you would weigh it in the same ways that you would do that. And then you're just going to, at that point, you know, is it hearsay? Is there an exception to the hearsay? Looking at the layer hologram, which I think is probably the most famous of the holograms, where it might come in is for Obi-Wan's state of mind as to why he was going where he was going, because he was the only hope. And you know, so she was calling him to come to Alderaan. So if something were to happen to him on the way to Alderaan, you know, he is was there for the purpose, and his state of mind was to go there to meet with her. Other than that, I mean, it's really just applying our tried and true evidentiary rules that have been around for a long time.
Interestingly, I this is a rabbit hole that we probably don't have time to run down, but, you know, trying to authenticate and admit the Death Star plans into evidence and how it would play in there if all you have is a pair of those holograms. And, you know, I don't know, that brings up a whole lot of little pathways that she could go down.
I'm sure there's a lot of families that were affected by the destruction of the Death Star that, you know, might have sued for the fact that the Death Star was improperly built, and therefore the family should receive some monies from the Empire for all of the stormtroopers that were killed, the plumbers that were killed, as our friends would have debated in that wonderful Clerks segment, and you know, so clearly the plans would come in, and even, you know, the first prequel book to Rogue One, and the Rogue One book itself that went with the movie shows some of the emails between Erso and Galen and dealing with the way he led him to approve basically a, you know, a thermal vent, because that was the cheaper option, and they were running out of money. So it's a great memo. It's a great email. Yeah. It's kind of a smoking gun where, you know, he led them to approve this thing. So they knew about this defect, notwithstanding, in order to save a million Imperial credits, they saw it as the cheapest, quickest option, and he wanted that Death Star, you know, out and patrolling.
What's funny is before that book was ever written, in the Family Guy Blue Harvest kind of parody of Star Wars, there's a scene where, you know, Stewie's playing Darth Vader, and one of the officers briefs him on the, you know, the potential flaw, and they're like, he's like, well, can we just board it up? And they're like, oh, no. And they're talking cost just briefly, and he's like, whoa, let's get estimates before we start doing anything.
Right. It's great. It's literally could have been, you know, a $25 piece of plywood probably would have solved the situation.
Strap Jar Jar over the exhaust vent.
I wonder what, you know, the fact that you had an act of sabotage effectively that, you know, is the reason that you have the exhaust port in order for, you know, it to be exploited by the rebels later on. Like, you know, what's the Empire's liability for that? Because that's beyond just a normal design defect. Because
he was working for the Empire.
True.
When he put that defect in, so I think they're still on the hook, no matter what.
Interesting.
Plus, you can also make the argument that, you know, knowingly employing people that against their will, by killing their wives and then bringing them to the, that they knew or should have known the risk of employing him to such an extent on that project.
Director Krennic's gross negligence.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one thing to draft someone, but, you know, our rules on drafting people who are former military, I think the term is either 24 or 36 months, and he's there for 12, 15 years. You know, doing the work, you know, so like there, that's excessive. And I mean, like, the Empire does sow the seeds of its own destruction, because it's not a happy place to live with everything being treason, and they are building a weapon to instill fear by blowing up planets. That's a rough thing to defend. So, but again, lots of fun. So, Your Honor, with Father's Day coming up next month, what's on your wish list for Father's Day?
As my wife knows, because every time I see something new, I'm constantly like forwarding it to her. The wish list is beyond big. So, you know, it's whatever I get is wonderful. And whatever I don't get, it just, you know, stays on the wish list for another day. Nothing in particular, you know, is a do without type of thing. I'm certainly looking forward to some of the things that I haven't actually seen and that I haven't put on my wish list. Those are the things that, you know, the surprises that I get.
Totally.
That being said, I did see an incredibly cool TIE fighter popcorn bucket that they're selling in Hollywood Studios, and a BB-8 cup. So
I can vouch for I have seen the TIE fighter in person, sir, and is magnificent, and I have
it's
the BB-8.
Gorgeous. It's really cool. A friend of mine took a picture of himself the other day.
I you know, any question about my advocacy skills, you know, I stood in the 85, 90 degree heat in Orlando and rationalized why we needed this, you know, that BB-8 cup for my wife. Well, it's just a normal drink, right? You can drink it out of anything. You don't need to drink it out of BB-8, but you can drink it out of BB-8. That's the – so.
Just in this case, just because we can do something, we should.
Yeah. It's the classic
BB-8 is – BB-8 has certainly risen to a rare – because most of my collection is Imperial stuff, but BB-8 has certainly become a favorite. He's just so cute. He's just, you know, I have the robot one in chambers who, you know, patrols while I'm gone, and the effect that they did where he can watch the movie and react is so well done. And I was very, very surprised that they did it for Rogue One too. So they updated the app so that BB-8 can watch the Rogue One movie and react. And his reactions to the Darth Vader end scene are really fun.
I haven't tried that out. You have the Sphero BB-8s, or is that the one
yes,
you're talking about?
Yes, yeah, the Sphero BB-8.
I'll have to pull him off the charger and try that out. I haven't tested that yet. That's neat.
He could stay right on the charger and just, he just has to be close enough to hear the movie, because that's how it's set up, so that he's tracking the dialogue, so he knows how to react. So as long as he's near the sound source, then he reacts right in the charger seat.
That's fantastic.
Wow. So a couple things. First off, Judge Schirino was a lieutenant colonel, the Army Reserves.
New York State Guard, which is kind of a reserve to the National Guard in New York State. And we assisted the JAG officers for various mobilizations and things along those lines. And I also worked for a general in the U.S. Army Reserves who did military court-martials and for the 4th JAG LSO. Every time I've listened to your recent podcast, I am called to bear the fact that I've forgotten a lot of the uniform military code in the last couple of years.
You got to kick off the dust, sir.
So for anyone wondering why Thomas is referring to Judge Schirino as sir, that's why. So the more you know. The other part that's fun about BB-8 is people really love him. I spoke at Nerd Night LA back in March and just absolutely had a rip-roaring good time talking about Star Wars law. And I made the point that, you know, there are basically two groups of people in the world, those who want Chewbacca as their wingman and those who want R2-D2. And somebody yelled out, "I want BB-8. And I thought, oh my God, we have a new paradigm, because that person was right, because so many people love BB-8. There's like, I think, three, because BB-8 kind of took the R2 role in a completely different way in The Force Awakens.
I'll take BB-8 and K2SO or any day of the week, because C-3PO always kind of annoyed me with his probabilities, whereas you know, K2SO, it does it in such a humorous ways that he's definitely become one of my favorite droids as well.
I think K2 is kind of a mix of R2 and Chewbacca. on one level, because
he's got that height and that lovability of Chewbacca, even without the, you know, the teddy bear quality, to some extent, and really, really was a well done droid, including the actor who, you know, who made him real, who was kind of part of Star Wars lore too, and sci-fi lore from Firefly days and Serenity. You know, he has a certain ties to the movie and to sci-fi people that I think is special as well. And the some of the making of parts that come with the Rogue One DVD that show the way he did those parts were really, really funny.
Agreed. We love droids, and there's a lot to talk about with droids. But I mean, like at at Disneyland in the Star Wars area of Tomorrowland, they have, you know, the droid factory where you can go build your own droid.
You have to fight your way through a sea of children to make it, and some adults to get there.
Don't go Anakin on them. Just don't go Anakin.
And BB-8 now is a, you know, a character that you can go take your picture with in Disney World.
That's true.
And from what I've heard, you know, he's one of the most popular and the biggest lines. Him and Chewbacca have two of the biggest line sets. And they're supposedly soon going to be releasing droids that will be walking the park. They're working on R2 and other units that are supposed to interact with people, and it's Disney, and you know they're really looking to do some really cool things.
Wow, you know, I could see definitely Chewbacca, and I could see BB-8 having the long lines now. At San Diego Comic-Con and some of the other ones where I've seen the remote control R2-D2s, kids will go up and hug them.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what the mystique is. Why
it's real to them.
Yeah, it's real to them, but you see adults go up to it as well. I remember at the first Geeky Awards. Yeah. The first Geeky Awards, there was a lady who walked up and gave R2 a kiss. And people posing with picture, you know, with R2 for pictures. I too posed with R2 for a picture, because why not? What they're able to do in the future to help fill that desire that people have to interact with these characters, those are the droids we're looking for. So it is neat. It is absolutely neat. So Your Honor, any closing thoughts you have as we look at the 40th anniversary of the release of Star Wars?
I love the fact that the anniversaries are celebrated, because it's always a lot of nice collectibles and memorabilia and chances to talk about the movie. I'm beyond excited, you know, for the next movie to come out. And that to me eclipses the 40th anniversary. As much as it's nice to be nostalgic, I'm really looking forward to the next chapter in this amazing story.
Thomas, any other thoughts on the 40th?
Just a question for Judge. So, Your Honor, did you, as you were sitting there, you know, watching it for the, I guess, first and a half time, or first and a quarter time, did you think at all that 40 years from that moment, you'd be sitting down talking about not just one, but, you know, an entire universe of movies, collectibles, all those things, even an inkling?
Not even the smallest inkling. And I didn't get the inkling after seeing Empire Strikes Back either, nor the third movie. And I kind of thought that was going to be the end. I was then, you know, kind of reawakened with the Timothy Zahn books who brought me into the extended universe. And I then went and grabbed anything and everything that I hadn't read to that point, you know, including even like Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
Oh, yeah.
I have to admit that I own every single Star Wars book, not every comic book, but every one of the story books, and I kept them in chronological Star Wars order in my bookshelf. So I, when Disney announced that it was getting rid of the canon and killing the canon, a part of me, like, you know, really was sad about it. That being said, with what they're doing with it to increase the story, to me, far outweighs losing some of that canon. And I think that the more I've seen with what they're doing, they are bringing in some of the best of the canon into the new Disney canon. So what I do in life is balancing, and the scales have now firmly tipped in the benefit outweighing the loss at this point in my mind. So that's especially with this anniversary, to me, that's the best part about it.
I'm going to steal the judges, one of the judges' nuggets there is my final thought, which is that I think the best celebration that we've been given of this 40th anniversary really is the care and love that is being given to the new material, whether it be a simple little golden book, a comic book, novel, film. It's just incredible to see the property being treated this great with such fan service. That's the best celebration I can think of.
Yeah. The toys are good. Everything, or the coffee mugs or the socks or the t-shirts, there's great fan service that, the way what we had compared to what we had in 77, it's just, with the, like the IOU cards for that Christmas. and now having, the Kenner style Black Series coming out. Now, I held the Darth Vader one in my hand. That was the big box. Yeah. And it's like, oh my God, this is beautiful. And it's like, I would like any one of those. Those are a perfectly great gift for people graduating high school or college right now, or law school. Perfectly acceptable gift in my mind to give them one of those. So there's a lot here.
I received a Millennium Falcon for my law school graduation a present, and it's a really good story, but we've gone too long, so I will save the Millennium Falcon story for a future podcast if you remind me. But I did receive a Millennium Falcon for law school graduation.
That is outstanding. Well, everyone, this was part two, The Law Strikes Back. Join us for part three, The Return of the Lawyer, and get ready for to celebrate Star Wars at 40. Thank you all, and stay geeky, America. Stay geeky.